I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris, for the cold.
And brought to you by you. Thank you to our patrons supporting us each week for another year at patreon.com/UKtech. If you're a patron, you're beautiful and we love you. And this is your extended ad-free version of this week's show. But if you're not a patron,
you're still beautiful.
Exactly. But if you'd like to become a patron and get our ad-free versions, our extended cuts, live streaming, access to our 24/7 Discord members club, which we're streaming live through now, and hello to everyone listening to us live, then head to patreon.com/UKtech. Find out how you can support us with no commitment. Happy New Year, everybody. And in fact, Happy New Year in particular to some of our new patrons, Sandy Shomer, Josh Spiro, Matthew Riley adjusted his pledge as well. So they're our newest patrons. And thank you to everyone who's still supporting us from over the last year. We're coming up to almost a year on doing Patreon, which is very exciting, isn't
it? Wow, that's been longer than I thought.
I should point out that we did put out an outtake special over the New Year period, which was a week later than I planned on it, and I won't explain why. It's safe to say I had a very good reason.
I can attest, he does have a good reason.
And as part of that, we did have a segment that we cut out of a show towards the end of last year about names and things. And as part of that little conversation, we mentioned that Ian was such an unpopular name last year that not a single baby was registered in Britain with the name Ian. Now, Ian Davies tweeted at us after hearing that episode and says, "Speaking as an Ian, I take great pride in having an unusual name. If anyone is taking a list of attendees for anything and asks Ian who, I explain, it's not needed. I'm the only one. I get very suspicious if there's two of us in a room. We both suspect the other as an imposter." He said, "Additionally, my neighbour shortened the name to E."
Which is what my uni mates tried to pull on me, but I was having none of it.
Fun. So thank you, and I hope everybody enjoyed all of last year's show. We've got some amazing ideas for this year, lots of fun stuff coming up, and hopefully some exciting stuff for all concerned. Later on in the show, we're not going to talk pretty much at all about CES. You might be surprised for a consumer tech podcast not talking about the Consumer Electronics Show. But frankly, if you care about CES, you've probably read everything and heard everything you need. You don't really need us to recap it. That's not why we're here. So I should point you towards Tom Merritt and the gang on Daily Tech News Show. They did an amazing job at covering CES from the show floor. All the top tech, all the most important stuff, all the biggest news. So go and listen to them if you want some detailed, granular CES coverage. We're going to largely skip over it, although we will be dabbling into a little bit of it in our extended version this week later on. Using contactless payments in the UK using mobile devices, and indeed the plastic they aim to replace, became more attractive and less expensive this weekend as a government ban that stops retailers charging fees for using credit cards came into force, Ian. This is exciting news. The law aims to tackle what the government calls rip-off charges. And here's an example, which The Guardian used to illustrate an extreme case. Just Eat, you know, the food ordering and delivering service, revealed in 2016 that, quote, payment card / admin fee revenue accounted for about 13% of its total revenue. Now, the company makes about £500 million of revenue, or rather, it generates about £500 million of revenue annually. So that's an awful lot of money it may have to say goodbye to. Now, the paper, The Guardian that is, pointed out that Just Eat replaced its 50 pence card surcharge with a 50 pence service charge on all orders, which it actually even applies, apparently, to a restaurant if you pay in cash, which is a bit of a slap in the face. But the good news, Ian, is that most places aren't scumbags. And so for consumers, this is great news and will further, I think, encourage the switch from cash to digital payments. So the rub is, card, if you're paying by card, you can still be told there's a minimum to pay on a card, but you cannot be charged for using a card or contactless payments like Apple Pay, Google Pay, as it now, I believe, has been rebranded entirely, and Samsung Pay.
In fairness, I mean, this is well overdue, isn't it, really? And the charges are not that big for merchants, really. It is a bit of a price gouge. But I also am aware that small retailers tend to use it. So, for example, there's a shop near me that I'll use if I need to go and get some supplies on a weekend when most things are shut. Not a big shop, but, you know, nice family-run thing. But, yeah, they will charge you, or they were charging you for transactions. I think if it was only if it was under a minimum amount, though. So if you spent £10, I think they'd let you use the machine, you know, the card thing for free. But if it was under that, then you'd have to pay, which I kind of can see that, because obviously it has to be worth it as a percentage of what they're paying for them, you know, otherwise they're just not going to make any money at all once they've factored in merchant fees and stuff like that. But on the whole, I think it's companies like Just Eat that are really the problem here with this 50p charge. I mean, what is the point of that? Why can't it be rolled into the bill? I mean, I don't understand why you have to annoy me by saying you're being charged 50p for this. Is the law that badly thought out that they can switch from a card surcharge to a service charge? I mean, you know, like, isn't that not just what everyone's going to do? Oh, well, you're using the card machine. That's an oxygen surcharge because it takes longer to process a card payment and you're breathing in more oxygen. It's also true that cash processing is very, very expensive. So, for example, if Just Eat was to say, okay, well, you'll have to pay a card surcharge or cash will be no surcharge, which is what would be reasonable, it would cost them more to process the cash than it would to process the cards, because you've got to go to a bank, you've got to run the risk of being robbed or whatever at any point during the time you've got that large amount of cash on your premises. Obviously, that's a bit different for Just Eat, but, you know, take another business. They don't want to deal with cash. Cash is very, very expensive. And so cards for them, although there is a fee, is generally a more, you know, financially productive way of doing things. So I'm surprised that companies haven't seen the benefits of it. And cashback, as I've said probably before, was invented as a way of getting rid of cash supplies.
And it should be pointed out, this also applies not just to, you know, contactless and things like Visa, MasterCard and credit and debit cards. It also applies to Apple Pay. It applies to PayPal. And similarly, they won't be able to charge for using those. So it's not just card payments. It is sort of all forms of non-cash to a certain extent. It stops short of covering Bitcoin, of course, but it's still good news. Actually, as a side note, the whole card charge scheme came alongside a wider thing initiative called the Open Banking Initiative. And this isn't something we're going to go into detail today. In fact, frankly, it's more of a thing for my day job at Bloomberg than it is here on Text Message. But the markets watchdog told banks that they must open up the information that they hold so it can be used to create new products by other players. So the financial paper CTAM actually said that many companies are going to start being able now to work on creating new apps and bots and other tools and stuff to try and make handling your finances you know, a bit more fun, if you like, or certainly a bit closer to what you'd expect of the likes of Facebook or ordering an Uber or something like that. And that came into play this weekend as well. So it's a good time, I think, for Britain in terms of thinking about the future of our payment systems, because a lot's going to change this year. It's good news.
Yeah.
On the Twitters, Paul Gannon, one of our listeners, wrote in and says, I use Yolt. It's a great service. Shows me where my money is being spent. I can categorize and add notes to my transactions. Took a bit of time reorganizing into correct categories, but I do find it useful. I've never heard of Yolt, but if anyone else is using such a service or any of these kind of modern money management tools that we now have at our disposal, do let us know at the usual place, hello@techpodcast.uk. The Entertainment Retailers Association revealed this week that UK sales of music, movies and video games reached a record high in 2017, helped mostly by digital services like Spotify, Valve, Steam, Netflix, Amazon, Sky, Apple, Google, etc., according to a useful summary on Engadget. Over the last 12 months, the blog writes, Brits spent £7.24 billion on music, films and games, which is nearly a 9% increase over the previous year. And digital services accounted for about 72% of that, which drove the UK entertainment market to its fifth straight year of growth, which is good news for those industries. In terms of music, physical sales fell about 3.5% over... and paid, this is interesting actually, well, the whole thing is obviously very, very interesting, but of particular interest, paid for downloads fell 23%. So that's really, really significant when you factor in the fact that streaming music rose about 42%. And it's similar for films, which saw both physical and rental sales drop last year, while streams and downloads were up about 22%. So we're seeing this continued advancement of streaming taking over purchasing, both in terms of physical copies from stores as well as paid for, you know, DRM free downloads from the likes of iTunes. What should be pointed out, because it's easy to think that this is you know, maybe isolated to us, but I checked out some figures from Nielsen just to look at the US, and things are similar over there as well. Last week, Nielsen published a report that said overall consumption of albums, songs, and on-demand audio streaming in the States grew 12.5% year over year, and there was a 59% increase in on-demand audio streams, which offset track and album sales, which have continued to decline. Although, interestingly, Ian, Britain's Ed Sheeran led the way in terms of total volume of consumption, you know, so downloads and streams and everything, which beat out the local Taylor Swift. Well, as we said, Ian, at the top of the show, if you want to hear a big, big rundown of what happened at CES, go and check out the last few days' episodes of Daily Tech News Show that Tom and the gang have been doing. We're not really going to talk about it that much, but one of the things that did intrigue me this year is wireless charging. And it's a dumb name for a technology to start with. Let's just get this out of the way. It's a bit like digital. When people talk about digital downloads, digital music downloads, it's like they're all digital. It's just a download. And wireless charging, you know, just plug the wireless charging mat into your power outlet using a wire.
I understand your frustration with this, but at the same time, it is wireless in that it isn't in that the same way Bluetooth headphones are wireless. They still require you charge them up with a wire. And they still, I mean, yeah.
Doesn't
count. You see what I mean?
Doesn't count. It doesn't count because when you're using, in the act of, it's got to be the act of using. Has
right.
to be wireless.
Yeah.
In my opinion, for something to be wireless. So the fact that when you use a pair of Bluetooth headphones, regardless of how it's being charged up, it is being used wirelessly, you know? And with a wireless cable charger, with a wireless charger currently, the vast majority of implementations require you plug it in to something with a wire. Now, the exception are things where it's been baked into a desk, and I'm willing to concede that that is wireless because to a user, they're not even seeing a wire. There's no interface there, and I'm willing to accept that. But the reason we're talking about it here is because The Verge wrote that from CES, they wrote at CES, that they've seen a huge wave of Qi wireless charger, which is now really the industry standard. It's actually a standard that's been around for ages. It's just that after Apple introduced the Qi charging feature in the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 10, accessories companies are now starting to cash in. PowerMat, in fact, which I talked about on the Patreon blog a little while ago, it had long been pushing the PMA wireless charging standard, which was the primary competitor to Qi. They announced, according to The Verge, quietly that it had joined the Wireless Power Consortium, which basically unifies pretty much everyone behind the Qi standard.
Yeah.
Now, I think this is good news on the one hand, at least, because the more industry focus on a single standard, the better. Obviously, the more competitors, the more innovation we get to see. I just think we've got to be careful and not let marketing get in the way here, because these technologies are not wireless as long as they require a wire. I think when they're embedded into hardware, it's a really good step, but they need to be fairly accurately positioned still, as in your device has to be fairly accurately positioned still on a mat. And I think that makes them a little less flexible than just using a cable. Now, I have written about this before, and I do think that in my head, I see this future where we can move towards wireless charging points in, you know, hotels and coffee shops and things like that being discoverable via an app or a mapping system, kind of like we have with public Wi-Fi hotspots now, where you can fire up an app and it'll show you where all the nearest, what, you know, hotspots are for various providers or if they're free or things like that. But I think the goal has still got to be to make wireless charging where the field of charge availability, like, is spread over a wider area, you know, maybe even just a foot or a meter or something. Maybe keyboards can become conduits, or the chassis of an all-in-one PC, or even some sort of beam-forming transmitter that sends more power but over a, you know, a narrow but targeted distance, something like that. That's what I want to see, and until then, I just sort of feel that we need to be careful about what we call wireless charging, because it all feels a little bit not wireless to me. Anyway, I wanted to have a rant.
I don't agree with that, actually. I mean, I can see what your point is, and it is a point that's been made by you and others. But I don't care. I understand. For me, it is much more convenient to put my phone. My iPhone is currently on a charger that I reviewed years and years ago, a Tilt charger that's really good, actually. It's a little, little stand, sits on the desk, cable tucked away. I put the iPhone on. The iPhone is about the same width as the stand. So as soon as I put it on, it immediately locks on and charges. Works perfectly. For me, I understand the principle that it's not actually wireless. But for me, that just I just doesn't factor as an argument. It's so much easier to put the thing on a charging mat than it is to fiddle around, even with Apple's own dock, like that, you know, the little desktop stand that you can get that has a DAC built in. And that thing's great, but it's not as easy to dock it on that. And I worry so much about stressing the charging port that I kind of feel like I feel guilty almost every time I put it on. But with the wireless charger, I just sling it on the desk. It doesn't charge particularly quickly, but actually I kind of like that because during the day, you know, I'll have used it a bit, it'll drop down a bit, just pop it on. It's a nice gentle charge. This is how it works in my brain anyway. I'm sure it's the science reality of it's quite different. But it just gives me a top up, and it just means that when I pick my phone up, it's pretty much 100% charged. I don't have to worry about plugging it in. And also, let's be honest, particularly with Apple, charging cables aren't cheap. Like, they're not, you know, to have one in every room where you might want to charge your phone. Let's be realistic. Like, I mean, I know there's no reason to charge your phone in every room, but you want your phone to be near you at all times. So I've got, because of Apple made the sensible decision to follow Qi rather than do their own thing, I've got a Samsung charger in the lounge that I can use. I've got this Tilt thing here. There's, you know, there's been no sign of the official Apple charger, has there, yet? So, you know, I'm happy using those things. And I've amassed enough of them over the years that I can have one in pretty much every room, which is kind of nice.
I suppose so. And in the chat room, we had a few comments about this. I mean, Stephen Huxtable thinks that, yeah, he says he loves his wireless charger after being a bit of a hater. And John Evans talks about it being great late at night in the dark. And that side of things, I can definitely agree with, because often, because of shift work, my wife is in bed before I am and the light is off. And I usually stumble in, trip over all the mess on my side of the bed, and then try and put my iPhone into the dock. And I'm always sort of rolling it around blindly over the metal, waiting for it to clip in. Sometimes the little charging prong goes between the iPhone's case and the iPhone itself, and I think it's charging, but it isn't. And eventually I have to sort of slide my other hand's finger, just swipe underneath the phone to find out where the hole is until I can fully, you know, penetrate the little orifice and achieve charging.
What's the certification people in the US for things like this? They were looking at an application for something that charged within 3 feet. So it was completely wireless. It was a beam, as you suggested. You'd walk into an area, I don't know, say if you were sat at a desk, and you'd have a thing above you, or you'd have something under the desk maybe, and it would have a 3 foot area that was, you would put your phone in it and it would charge. So that is obviously coming.
Stephen in the chat room says it's almost as good as a shoehorn. Key there, though, I think, mate, is
almost.
Is exactly almost. And by the way, we had a number of people tell us that they've been buying shoehorns for people over Christmas. So I think the global shoehorn industry must have skyrocketed thanks to you and I, mate.
We're really in the pockets of big shoehorn. Hold on. Oh, I think I've got it. Here we go. No, I've got it. Here we go. FCC gives first approval for wireless charging at a distance. A company called What's Up works up to 3 feet away. Hold on. The latter is used to send focused RF-based power to devices as far as 3 feet away. This ushers in a new era of wireless charging for devices, you know, obviously. It was supposed to be demonstrated at the CES. I don't know what happened with it. Let me Google the company name and see if anything shows up from CES.
This sounds a lot like what I was describing, in that we need something that's kind of like a beam-forming system, because to broadcast something out in a kind of spherical direction, if you like, you know, all around you, like Wi-Fi, for example, is not going to be efficient. It's also going to draw a lot of criticism that people's brain is being melted by invisible electrical waves. But this sounds a little more rational and realistic.
He's saying this chat, isn't he? Stephen saying it's wasteful. Yes, it absolutely would be. I don't know how you overcome that. I mean, wireless charging isn't completely free of waste. I think I seem to remember that they've made massive steps over the last years to get it up, but I remember it was something like half efficiency, basically. So you were wasting half the power. I think they've got it up to be much more like 90% efficient now, which is good. It takes time, you know. I mean, we have to accept the fact that at the start, things are never brilliant.
If you have any thoughts on what we've talked about, let us know. Obviously, hello@techpodcast.uk. But I don't think we need to spend our time talking about what we liked from CES necessarily. But we are certainly interested in hearing what you guys out there in listener land liked from CES this year. What was your highlight? What was your low light? Low lights are always fun as well. Do let us know any opinions you have so we can maybe do a little bit of a listener digest of highs and lows from CES this year. Send those in to hello@techpodcast.uk. Well, Ian, shining laser beams onto hillsides could be used as a method of scaring eagles away from flocks of sheep. The BBC reported this week that frickin' laser beam technology, although they didn't use that word, that's my phrasing, is to be trialled in Argyll, an area of Scotland where farmers have had issues with the raptors preying on lambs. Interesting point here, Ian. Raptor means to seize.
I didn't know that. That makes something of a mockery of the Jurassic Park raptors that sort of don't seize as much as they do sort of claw, if you see what I mean.
Well, that's short for velociraptor. And I think they seize with their little hands, don't they?
Their little tiny claws. Who knows? Who knows? I don't know what's true anymore because I watched Jurassic World and it's the worst piece of crap I've ever seen in my entire life.
It's all fake news. It's all very bad. Don't worry, everyone. It's still me.
It's not Donald Trump. He hasn't popped into the room.
Scottish National Heritage said the trial would be carefully monitored, according to the BBC. Now, I think this is an interesting approach because if you think about what we saw a year ago, the Dutch police were believed to be the first force in the world to use eagles to take down unauthorized drones flying around the air. Isn't that crazy that, you know, last year it was, OK, we're going to get eagles to take out drones. And then this year it's right, we're going to use lasers to take out eagles. What next? Mice to take out lasers? Is someone going to bring in Lassie to take down, you know, I don't know.
Well, I would say that I think it's unlikely we're going to have a huge problem with rogue lasers. But I mean, the way this country's going, I wouldn't be too surprised if we do end up with, you know, a network of rogue lasers hunting us all down and shooting us in the brain.
Any thoughts you have on what next for eagles or lasers or indeed anything at all? hello@techpodcast.uk. Well, it's time to dive headfirst into our 2018 mailbag, which contains almost exclusively mail that fell into the bag from 2017. We've got quite a lot of it because of the length of time the show was without a regular episode in December. So we're going to do some of it this week, some of it next week. And we're going to start by a message from John, who says, "Hi, Nate and Ian. With my phone contract due for renewal in February, I've been interested in your recent discussions about buying the handset outright and getting a cheaper SIM-only deal. I'm currently paying a whopping £55 a month for 8 gig of data, so it would seem like a no-brainer to get more data for less with a SIM-only deal." My God, £55 a month for 8 gig.
Yeah,
you get someone killed for that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's true. Yeah, I assume that's because it includes a phone, obviously, because I'm only paying 20 quid for unlimited data, but
that's true. Assassins never throw in a handset when you get them to kill somebody.
Right, true. Yes, okay, fine.
I'd wager.
Yeah, well, I don't. You don't know that, though, do you? For sure, you can't say You can't say there's never been a deal done where someone goes, "I'll give you 55 quid if you kill this person, but I'm also going to need a phone." It could have happened.
Well, it didn't happen to John, fortunately, but he did say, unfortunately, I hit a stumbling block. My house is a 1950s council house with thick walls that have been cavity insulated. It's like a Faraday cage with no phone signals of any network managing to penetrate. I tried to persuade all of my friends and family to contact me via WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger, but there were holdouts like my elderly parents who couldn't get their heads around the idea that I just wasn't getting their messages. Three activated native Wi-Fi calling without an app last year and was therefore revolutionary to me, and it felt like the way of the future. But here's where the stumbling block is with the SIM-only deal. None of the mobile networks offer Wi-Fi calling unless you get the handset from them. Most don't give an explanation, but EE mentioned something about putting their own firmware on the phone to make it possible. Surely that's a red herring, and it's just another attempt for mobile phone companies to keep us locked into expensive contracts. Now, I have to say, John, and in fact I did say because I emailed you back in a rare moment of responding directly via email. Normally we consider the reading out to be our response. Vodafone definitely does support Wi-Fi calling for SIM-only plans because I have a Wi-Fi calling option on my SIM-only plan from Vodafone and I did not buy my phone from Vodafone. So, and right. I did point that out.
Yes, but you got a reply, did you?
Yes, I mean, he said, thanks for replying. I'll have another look at Vodafone. He says they're not his favourite network and he couldn't get away from them fast enough when he moved to them from Three, which I found massively ironic since I joined Vodafone after getting sick of Three.
Yeah, so on this subject, I think it depends on the phone. I was gonna I was gonna reply and then obviously Christmas just totally got in the way or whatever. Or was it after? I can't remember now. Basically, my understanding is that if you get an unlocked iPhone, you can put that on Three Wi-Fi with very little problem. Mine is a SIM only and it's on Wi-Fi calling. I think it's different with other phones like the Samsung Galaxy S8 and stuff like that. But I don't know why. I should have looked into it really, so I had a cogent answer. But I'm aware of the issue. But I suspect it's one of those things that will go away with time. All the phones support the standard. So it's not particularly difficult to implement. I just don't know why they require... I think because a lot of them, you have to have a specific firmware. And I guess that's a security thing, presumably, because they don't want you just being able to hack into their network, as it were.
Well, I would be interested if anybody else out there has got a SIM-only deal and has got a Wi-Fi calling option so we can pass that over to John and anyone else listening who has seen this as a stumbling block. But certainly, at least for me, unless I've got some bizarre grandfathered option, I can use Wi-Fi calling on my phone. Now, do you want to take this next one we had from Charles Cadenhead, who emailed
Yeah,
Ian?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Here in the US, at least here in Texas, most schools do not allow phones out in class. Some teachers allow students to use their phones or integrate phones into the lesson with clicker apps or looking something up. But it's the teacher, but it's on a teacher-by-teacher basis. My son is in high school and his school will pick up student phones if they're caught and charge them $20 to get them back. My son says he doesn't see many phones out. I teach college classes and I tell my students to mute their phones or put them away. Our students pay hundreds of dollars for a class and I want to make sure they get 100% of what they paid for. I enjoy the show. Thank you for it. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, sometimes with students, you sort of have to kind of say, well, look, this is your time and money and education you're wasting. If you don't listen, no one's going to come and explain this to you again in 10 years when you're sitting wondering why you can't fill in your tax return because you didn't pay attention in maths, which is my problem.
Well, as a side note, John in the chat room said that they've had a recent update about GDPR, which is the new EU General Data Protection Regulation, which I'm currently neck deep in for work reasons. And he says he's basically going to have to give up taking his phone to school where he works. So that's another interesting one. I mean, that's all about privacy and data protection.
Why
stuff.
Is that though? I mean, what's the reasoning for that? He's going to type in the chat. We should do something on this because it's a really interesting topic, and I don't know anywhere near enough about it. But if you're researching it, it would be interesting for me to ask you questions and from a layperson's perspective, and perhaps educate people because it sounds.
Well, maybe John could send us an email that we can read out next week about how this is impacting him at school and work. It would be very, very interesting. Finally, a little note from Stuart Robertson here. Sorry, not from Stuart Robertson. Yes, it is Stuart Robertson. Guys, liked the recent discussion on shoehorns. Which one? As a long-term user, I concur, they are fantastic. What about a white shoehorn with an Apple logo and sell it for 20 quid? From what I've seen, there are a lot of mugs out there willing to part with their money. Boom. Very good. We'd asked for innovations for shoehorns, hadn't we, mate, before Christmas?
Yeah, what could we did. And I mean, I am amazed that at CES there wasn't a shoehorn robot that would sort of scuttle up to you while you were putting your shoes on and sort of horn its way into your footwear.
I agree. You could maybe summon that robot with a horn, a different type of horn, of course, and sort of contain the horn experience even better in your household. We're going to come to some other emails next week because we did have some others. We had a very long one from Stuart Whitehouse as well, but we're going to come to that next week. So apologies for that, Stuart, but you guys are just so interesting. We have a hard job not reading out all of your messages. Anything you want to do, of course, send them to us at hello@techpodcast.uk. Let's check in with the DTNS crew and see what's been going on this week, even though, of course, we know because CES has been happening.
Hey there. This week we were at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, so we talked about a lot of new stuff, including LG's rollable TV, the HTC Vive Pro, an almost invisible hearing aid, and much more, plus an AI training program that tries to guess whether you have a British or American accent. I was able to fool it. And we discuss why robots seem to need to look cute and adorable. Can we trust them? You'll just need to head to DailyTechNewsShow.com for that answer and much, much more. Back to you guys.
Thank you, Tom. Okay, mate, that's it. For those of you listening live or listening to our unedited versions via Patreon, you'll know that this week has been a bit of a mess behind the scenes. What you've heard for you guys on the free feed and on the extended feed is a tightly polished, heavily edited version. But my God, was this week a mess behind the scenes. So if you're listening, if you get our unedited version on our $5 tier, this might be a week to check out if you want to hear how badly we screw up the show sometimes. The chat room has been very pleased because it's been a lot of swearing and outtakes and us doing things wrong. But thank you to all of our patrons supporting us at techpodcast.uk, at patreon.com/UK Tech. And also thank you to everybody supporting us by listening to the free show and leaving us reviews and telling your friends and family and enemies and everybody else, because you guys help. There's a hell of a lot more of you out there listening on the free feed, so you guys support us massively by leaving us reviews. Maybe you haven't left one for a while, maybe you'd like to leave another one, or if you haven't written one at all, maybe you'd like to write one. It really helps. And you can do that on iTunes, certainly, but also any podcatching software you use that has a store. It would be fantastic. Ian, I think that's it.
Yes.
We're done.
Awesome. Thanks. That was good. It was fun, if a little incompetent.
Only if you were listening to the unedited or live version.
Yes,
because
true.
I think the competence displayed on the free and extended versions was, if I may speak in advance of editing it, absolutely marvellous.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.